Warning, the podcast Under the Stairs is not safe for work. We'll feature movie spoilers and language which most listeners may find offensive. Brought to you in conjunction with Legion Podcast Network. Welcome to the podcast Under the Stairs. Hi everyone and welcome to the podcast Under the Stairs. This is a very, very special bonus episode. I'm your host Duncan McLeish and welcome to the show. Now you're thinking to yourself, why is this a very, very special bonus episode? Well, before you start thinking too much, you give yourself wrinkles and grey hairs, let me save you the effort. This is a very special bonus episode because it's one of these rare occasions where I can sit back, accept no responsibility for anything that is going to happen on this show, because in the horror podcasting game, we like to call this one a self-inflicted wound. My guest, who I will introduce in just a couple of seconds, made a colossal mistake. He has not made this mistake since he said the words, I might just sit down and watch Paranormal Activity myself. I think you know who I'm talking about. He's, of course, the man, the myth, the legend, the Baz.
Good day, my sexy Antipodean swagman cobbles.
I literally do not know what you just said there.
Australian gibberish, my friend. Authentic Australian gibberish.
How's it going?
It's well, not great when once we start talking about this film. This film aside, things have been peachy. But, yes, yeah, you're calling it, what was it, a self-inflicted wound. In the footballing parlance, it's an own goal.
Yeah.
It is definitely an own goal.
Seven strikes and you're out, Baz. I know all about football. All about that football. Here's your green card. So you can now officially stay in the grounds of the football stadium forever, apparently. Citizenship? I don't know.
People already think we're married. Don't be mentioning green cards.
That's how it happened. The podcast is just a facade. It's just a ruse to pass things off, just in case the Home Office checks us out. This is a bonus episode, which means things are a bit tighter. It's a shorter episode. Only one review, thank fuck. And very little banter at the start. But the very little banter we have has to set a scene here. Because I didn't pick the movie, you picked the movie.
Yes.
I warned you in advance.
You did.
I didn't warn. I just said it was a rough watch. And I think sometimes you hear that and you're like, ah, sure it is, Duncan. And I was like, nah, there's a rough watch. And I started to say the sentence, there is a scene with that, and then I stopped myself. But I watched this movie.
You ended up saying that, there's one particular scene. That was the way you left it, kind of thing.
Yeah, and I still think that's probably the one particular scene that really, really... Well, we'll find out. I'm not going to say anymore. The movie is, of course, The Killing Ground from 2016. It's an Australian horror movie released officially in the UK this year. So I think it actually debuted in the UK at Fright Fest back in August, but it was readily available not long after that. I was very lucky to get a press screener, which I didn't actually watch until much nearer... the time of this recording. I watched it as part of my 31 of October, and when I watched it, the first thing that came through my head was, you know what, I really wish this had been in my Baz V Halloween list, because I was very confident, like very, very confident, down to the fact that even the family in this one is basically the Baz family.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about that. It's eerily similar.
Yeah, we'll set the scene here. I came to your house bearing a gift, a brand new microphone that the listeners, through their very kind donations and purchasing Bazfly t-shirts, bought you.
Yes, and it's the very microphone that I am speaking these very words into right now.
Very sexy words, sexy, sexy words. And me and you got to a bit of the chatting, and what did you say, Baz?
I said, you were talking about your sort of recording schedule leading up to Christmas and your usual Christmas break. And you're rattling through all the different things you'd arranged with different people and that, and I said, well, listen, if you're looking for a one-off, wee short show, just to fill a week or to put out 1 week kind of thing when you're not getting else on, I've got an idea for a show, I've read about a film that I'd really like to watch, and I think we could cover it on the show. And at that point, I didn't know you had watched it.
Yes.
I thought this was one that I had managed to discover. And it turned out not to be. You immediately turned around to me and said, oh yeah, I've seen it. And I felt all deflated and that. And then you're like, hey, we can do it if you want, though. But you did say at the time you won't enjoy it.
Yeah.
And yeah, okay, we'll come back to that.
Yeah, so yeah, I'm quite excited about this. We know for a fact that you have a strong love of Australian horror movies.
Yes.
We spoke about it at huge lengths on this show, and the reason you love them is everything they do just kind of feels a bit more fresh and a bit more unique than, you know, the genres of similar stature in other parts of the world.
There's
just something about it.
We talked about this in the Bazziversary show. One of our listeners had asked a question about why do we think Australian horror is so good, and when we talked at length about it, then in the end it was very much that. And you know, one thing I actually forgot to say during that conversation was the quality of the acting is always extremely high, grittily realistic. Do you know, to the point that you kind of forget, like I said, the only problem I had with Snowtown was that the main character in it, the serial killer in it, had been in a show after it in America. Yeah. He was in that term, The Washington Spies, which I had seen. But even at that, I couldn't equate him with the character I was familiar with, kind of thing. The Australia, they just produced some great actors. In this country, you know, most of our kind of exposure to Australian actors is through the soap operas like Neighbours and Home and Away and stuff. And we tend to mock it, you know, the sort of flimsy sets and stuff like that that are used. But I think we're probably doing them a disservice because the vast majority of the acting in all of these is brilliant.
Do you think it's better than... If I was just to say, just in general, have you seen any Australian horror movie that you've disliked?
No. No, I don't think so. Pretty much everything I've seen from Australia or even New Zealand, I've loved. I may not have... I wouldn't say I've loved. I've thought they've been excellent. Do you know what I mean? Because a lot of them are very unpleasant. And not even in a kind of scary kind of way. They're just, they make you feel really like you need a shower after it kind of thing. But that's because they're so well made. Mm. So, yeah, everyone I've seen, I've held in very high esteem.
Right. So, I'm curious. I'm curious because, like I say, I did give you a slight heads up. I did, in advance, kind of warn you it was a rough ride. And of course, in the back of my head, knowing now what you're like watching movies and knowing how much of yourself goes into the movie watching experience, how much you put yourself in these scenarios, which is just a crazy way to watch movies. Bas, it's just like, just don't do it, just don't do it. But knowing that you do things that way, it will be interesting to see where this one lands. Now, it's also worth saying that you will be coming back this month to do your episode as part of our listener choice for December. And I think on the day of this recording, we are less than 24 hours left on the poll. And it looks like it's pretty much a runaway.
I think less so than previously. For the first few days, I think two of them were kind of head and shoulders above the rest, but one of them is kind of pretty firmly pulling away now.
Yes, so I think everything going the way I think it probably will go. The movie we'll be discussing is Fright Night, the iconic 1980s just bitchin' horror movie. It's one that I dearly love, so much so that I did an In Reverence show purely on that. As a movie I came to in my youth, and it's kind of stuck with me since because I think it's great. Big Davey loves Fright Night.
Yeah.
The Big Sex Bomb Dave loves Fright Night. So it looks like that's going to be the one that's going to land on. I think people were a bit shocked. Once again, don't know why, if you've been listening to this show, why you'd be shocked that Baz has never seen Fright Night.
I can't remember which listener it was posted in the comments. Has Barry never seen any of these films? No. That's what Baz V Horror's all about.
Welcome to the Facebook page. Welcome to the show. This is Baz. He's not seen horror movies. Welcome to our segment. So you'll be back later on in the month of December, and we will be covering that movie. But
we think it's not definite yet, but it's looking that way.
Yes. It looks very much like that's going to be the movie. Like I say, less than 24 hours left in the poll. I can't see it really. Stranger things have happened.
It's been a fairly fair poll so far. There's been no skullduggery, shall we say. But hey, it's early days yet. I've got a whole day left to ruin this poll.
There we go, ladies and gents, you heard it here first, although by the time you hear this episode, it will have been closed. So I'll leave it up to you to decide whether or not skullduggery was actually employed or not. Right, Baz, we have a movie to talk about and a conversation which is, I get a strong feeling, is going to lead to a lot of misery on your end, which, I'm going to be honest, gets me slightly erect. So what we're going to do is we're going to take our first break of this episode. You are going to hear promos for shows that we love. You're also going to hear the trailer for this one movie review on this bonus episode. It's The Killing Ground from 2016. Myself and the Baz are coming right back to discuss that movie right after this.
Hello, this is The Doom Show. Keep on keeping on and keep on trucking, America. We don't listen to our feedback because we don't get any.
The truth hurts.
I just alienated the two people that give us constant feedback. Sorry, guys.
That's got to go.
That's got to go in there.
So on the show, we talk about giallo movies and slasher movies and cult movies. Sometimes we even talk about Cameron Mitchell and his movies. I am Richard. Who are you?
I am Brad, the guy that's not Richard, or Jeffrey, or Simon.
That's right, we have four people, and we always talk at once, except to each other.
Jeffrey lives up north, Simon lives across the world, Richard lives in Penis, Alabama.
Hello, This is the Doom Show is a proud member of the Legion Podcast Network. Check out the other shows on legionpodcast.com. You can check out more Hello, This is the Doom Show at hellodoomshow.podomatic.com or at doommoviethon.com.
Check for our Amazon exclusive Hello, This is the Doom Show cookbook.
Do you like hot dogs?
We got them.
Do you like mac and cheese?
We got it.
Do you like cheddar?
We have it.
Actually, we don't.
No cheddar.
Just Colby Jack.
Hello, This is the Doom Show. We never gave up on you because you never gave up on us.
Wow.
This is not a test. This is the Psychosemantic Podcast.
Announcing the commencement of the annual purge sanctioned by the U.S. government. Weapons of Class 4 and lower have been authorized for use during the purge. All other weapons are restricted. Government officials of ranking 10 have been granted immunity from the purge and shall not be harmed.
A few days ago, I called the news the enemy of the people, and they are. They are the enemy of the people.
We have Ben Jacobs, that's the Guardian reporter, body slammed tonight by the Republican candidate Greg Gianforte.
Like living with a six-year-old.
I do want to be on.
I'm not able to be rushed this fast. It makes me nervous.
The head is one big pile of shit.
Well, then you two learned a very important lesson today. Cops don't help.
It's a prank!
Now is not the time for fear. That comes later.
Can you fly, Bobby?
In the 20th century, the Senate voted on 7 Supreme Court nominees during election years, and it approved all but one.
So just to put a button on this, are you ruling it out 100%?
Yeah.
Are you crazy? Is that your problem?
Politics, movies, political movies. The Psychosemantic Podcast, better known as the Psychosemanticast.
He did what we all must learn to do. You and you and you and you. Duck and cover.
Pretty much how I remember it, except for the tent.
There's plenty of room. We can set up over here. Who's that, Ollie?
Boo.
Oh. Who do you think they are?
No idea. I'm sure they'll turn up soon enough.
Sure you don't want to come?
No, thanks.
Hello?
Check this out. This isn't right. What is it?
Car trouble.
Did I scare you?
Are you a ranger?
I'm a hunter.
Opportunities.
And welcome back. So you've just heard the trailer for this movie review in this bonus episode here. It is Killing Ground from 2016, written and directed by Damien Power. The movie stars, Harry Dyer, Mitzi Rollman, Tarney Coplin, Aaron Pedersen, Maya Strange, Aaron Glaney, Ian Meadows, Stephen Hunter, other folks. Synopsis for this one. A couple's camping trip turns into a frightening ordeal when they stumble across the scene of a horrific crime. Now, Baz.
Yes.
Oh, the tweets. Yeah. Oh, I was just like, yes. Sweet, sweet, sweet tweet suffering. Oh.
It was old school Baz V horror, man.
Yeah. It was a beauty to behold. It did make me slightly nostalgic and pine for that year one experience.
Yeah.
And I'm going to live vicariously through your review here. So I have set the stage. The stage is now set for you. The curtains are now opening. Please take centre stage. Baz, give us your review of Killing Ground.
Here we go. First of all, make yous aware, I don't have notes on this movie, like I normally
just
do.
Just feelings.
yes, basically. Nervous flashbacks and so on. I wanted to watch the film, because it wasn't for Baz V Halloween, it wasn't for a franchise thing, it was just a film I wanted to see, and I thought would be good to talk about on the show.
Yep.
But I had fully intended to go back after having watched it and then do one of my run-throughs and make some kind of comedic notes. I didn't do that for two principal reasons. One, kind of hard to make jokes at this film. it's not laden with humour.
No.
And two, to be quite honest, I can't bring myself to watch it again just yet.
It's the tone of the movie is how I would describe the McLeish family environment around Christmas dinner. Very serious. Very serious. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I genuinely, by the time I got to the end of it, I thought I'm not watching that again. I will watch this film again at some point. I mean, I genuinely will. But I just wasn't ready to watch it again before this show. I only watched it a couple of days ago, so... We're free-balling this mofo.
Free-balling.
So how I came across this film, followers of our Instagram account will have seen a photograph I posted a month or so ago of me holding a copy of Scream magazine, which I picked up when I was out in the town in Stirling. Just bored, wandering about the shops, ending up the newsagents. Saw it and thought, you know, I'm obsessed with horror films now, why not buy a magazine about it? And nestled, actually, it was the first part they were doing, they were covering the Texas Chainsaw Massacre franchise.
Oh, nice.
They did a two-part series on that, and the first part was in that. Of course, we've not long finished doing that ourselves. So I thought, oh, I'll get it for that, I'll have needed it for that. Waste of time, man, the review is shit compared to ours, to be quite frank. Shame on you, Scream Magazine. Employ us. Pay us lots of money. We'll make your product better. It'll probably get taken off most bookshelves in this country, but it'll be better.
Yeah, you'll have to buy it online, I think.
Yeah, on the dark web. but here nestled in the back of it was a couple of pages about this new Australian horror film called Killing Ground. And of course, that immediately kind of grabbed my attention and I had a read at it. And it got glowing reviews kind of thing in Scream magazine, and this kind of hung about in my head, and then I can't remember what else it was, but something brought it back to my mind not long before you were at my house that night, as you explained earlier on, and I decided, right, we'll do this. So as I say, I don't think you can get it in this country yet. It's not available to buy or anything like that, so we're watching a procured copy.
Yeah, it's a screener that was sent to me by the company that was responsible for PR for Frightfest.
Yeah.
Which saved me our journey to London, which is not a bad thing.
Fair play. So I don't know how you'll get hold of it if you fancy checking this out, folks. I'm sure you've managed somehow, but I was watching it. So this actually leads on to another part of this story, and I watched it on my laptop The kids, you know, my daughter, she's studying for her exams at the moment. The wee fella was in his bed. My wife was trying to get some work done, and I thought, I can't really sit here and be telling Glenn she's trying to work, kids are trying to get to sleep and stuff like that. I know, I watch it on my laptop, my headphones, my wife can carry on, do what she wants to do, and I'll watch this film. So, to put you in the picture, when I was watching this, I was sat on the couch with my laptop in my lap and my headphones on, and my wife was sitting next to me, working away, doing some stuff for her work. Mm-hmm. So that's the picture. Keep that in your head. The film itself has a, not necessarily an odd structure, quite a unique structure, I felt, the way they pieced the film together, which works really well. It opens with a young couple driving for a kind of weekend away, camping out in the bush type thing. Quite kind of reminiscent of like the start of films like Willow Creek and things like that. Mm-hmm. They're having a whale of a time, they're enjoying, they're making jokes, they're laughing. They realise they've forgotten the booze, they pull into a kind of local bar to pick some up. The male side of the partnership, he has a very brief interaction with a local guy outside. Turns out he's one of the kind of main protagonists in the movie. Mm. Anyway, they then drive on and they get to this particular campsite that they're going to, which he had mentioned to this chap that he spoke to. They get there, there is a kind of truck thing, like a 4x4 already parked up. They make comment on this and I think the guy has been to this camp area when he was young, yes, like with his family. Yeah, yeah. So he's familiar. He says, oh, it'll be fine, let's go down, look. They go down to the sort of side of the creek, to the sort of water's edge on the sand, and there is this tent, this orange tent with chairs outside it. Somebody else is obviously camping there. They make the decision, there's plenty of room, we'll just park the setters up over the other side of the beach and everything will be good, you know, we don't need to bother anybody kind of thing. So that's fine. And they go and they set up their tent, they're doing different things, and there's a, she then, in the, a kind of moment of passion, she suggests they get married. He's absolutely cock-a-hoop with the idea, so suddenly they're engaged. Mm-hmm. And they kind of settled in for the night and so on. Nobody is at this tent, the tent is empty. There's clearly been people there, there's chairs outside, there's towels hanging up and stuff like that. But we don't see anybody. And when it gets to the next morning, still nobody's turned up kind of thing. Now, the way the film works is you get scenes where this couple and the protagonist who they'll meet shortly, there are other scenes which are of a family of four,
yes,
who are the people that were with this other tent. But those scenes are in flashbacks, so when you're seeing them wandering about, talking away, doing all their stuff, it's a couple of weeks earlier. I think they came at Christmas time, and the young couple, who are the main ones in the film, are there round about, in fact, it's what we call Hogmanay's New Year's Eve, because mm-hmm. there's a scene in the tent later on when they wish each other Happy New Year and stuff like that. There's also a scene fairly early on with the guy from the pub that we met earlier on, kind of swarthy looking guy, straggly kind of dark beard. We find out his name's German, or well, his nickname is German. We see him at his house. He's got this dog called Banjo, I think, and he has like a roommate guy called Chook. And these are the two kind of protagonists in the movie. Yep. It becomes clear early on that something happened with them fairly recently. And it doesn't take a genius to figure out it's to do with this other family kind of thing, you know. Mm-hmm. Of the two of them, certainly initially for the first half or two-thirds of the movie, German is the kind of the alpha, if you like. But there is a... Chook initially comes off as a kind of snivelling wee kind of... just like a right wee dick, do you know what I mean? But there is a much darker side to his character that comes out later on. He looks like a wee kind of snivelling wee follower at the start, and to an extent that is correct. German is definitely the alpha, but when events take over later on, Chook's revealed to be a real fucking nasty bit of work type thing. Mm-hmm. Where things started to derail for me was really the first proper scene with the family.
Uh-huh.
I think there's... Initially, it's just the younger girl, and I'll explain the family setup in a minute, it's quite important. But initially, it's just the little girl, and then she goes back to the tent, and we see the family as a whole. And it took me about 3 seconds to realise there's something kind of familiar about these people.
Uh-huh.
There is a father, older guy, beard, ruggedly handsome.
All right, come on.
I mean, very clearly an athletic sexual prowess about him kind of thing. He has a magnetism about him. You know, a strong sexual aura.
So full of shit, man.
Yeah. He also dresses quite inappropriately for a man his age.
Yes, that's true. That's accurate.
It started ringing bells. Then there's his wife, who's clearly a good bit younger than him. Clearly slumming it. Then there's a teenage daughter, who is only the daughter of the dad.
Mm-hmm.
She is the stepdaughter of the mum. But then the mum and the dad have a 1-year-old male son.
Yep.
It was like looking at a weird Australian mirror of my family. Like everything, the wee boy is at exactly the same developmental stage as my son is.
Yeah.
The girl is exactly the same age and fucking morose, annoying little shit attitude that my daughter has. The guy seems a bit of a bad tempered prick and plays the guitar really badly.
Yeah.
It's uncanny, don't you? It has to be said. It was frighteningly similar. But it was when I realised, when I saw the wee baby,
yeah,
I was like, oh, fuck me, game over.
Yep.
Because even the baby did remind me at points, at certain camera shots, he actually reminded me facially of my wee boy.
Yes.
And it doesn't take a genius to figure out that this tent is empty and has been for a week or two because something bad has happened to these people. And I'm going, oh my fucking god. And my wife's sitting scribbling away in her notebook next to me kind of thing, and I just remember thinking, like, we're never going camping again. We're probably never going to watch TV again. And we need to have more kids or something, because this number now no longer works for me.
Duncan's voice echoing in the back of your head. It's not a pleasant watch, Baz. You're going to struggle with it.
Exactly. And you know, whatever it was that these two guys did was fairly unpleasant as well,
yeah,
kind of thing.
Yeah,
do you
yeah.
know what I mean? That is borne out later on in the film. So that was where things started to go wrong. And I think it wasn't long after that I think I wrote the first tweet, which was basically, I'm about halfway through watching this film for a bonus episode we're going to drop, and I've never wanted to turn it off so badly in all my life. And that was true. Nothing, when I wrote that tweet, nothing really bad had happened in this film yet.
Uh-huh.
I just had this overpowering sense of dread that something terrible was going to happen fairly soon. And it was going to happen to these people, and in my head, it would be happening to me and my family.
Uh-huh.
The next morning, I think the girl gets out and goes and checks the other tent, and it's kind of in a bit of disarray and stuff like that, and they start to get worried that something has happened to whoever was there. There's too much stuff lying about, the car's still there, so they know it's not just been abandoned.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like a crowd of teenagers turned up, get pissed, and just left the tent because they couldn't be bothered packing it. So they start to get a bit concerned. They then talk about basically trying and going to the police station or something like that. And I think they decide that they're just going to pack up and go themselves and sort of report this on the way. They then realise that their car has a flat, and the husband is unable to get the flat changed. He can't get one of the nuts undone, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think exactly how this worked in the movie. Oh God, yeah. He is, this was awful, this bit. He's struggling at the car. She goes to pack up some of the stuff, so she's kind of making shuttle runs between the car and their campsite on the beach. She's coming back from the beach, walking towards the car, up this little path. And, earlier on, the husband found a little kid's hat, like a kid's sun hat.
That's right.
Which my son has, with the name Ollie in it. And this is obviously this little boy. She's walking back to the thing, and this little baby toddles out behind her, like out of the bushes kind of thing, mm-hmm. and starts to walk up the path, you know, but he's just a wee toddler, so he's not going very fast. And she doesn't see him, he doesn't make any sound. I was broken at that point.
Yeah.
Just completely broken, because he just looks so helpless. And I was never so close in all my life as shouting at the fucking screen.
Yeah.
Like, to tell her to turn around. Do you know what I mean? Even thinking about it makes me feel fucking terrible. It's just that, you know, like kids, they're so utterly, utterly helpless at that age. They just rely on you to do everything for them. Mm-hmm. And it was just the thought that he's obviously been there for a number of days. I don't think you really kind of knew at this point that you're talking like a week or two. Well, not just a week, it would be. It was just fine. Anyway, she does turn to go back. She goes back down to get something else. And then he hears her screaming, oh my God, come quick, and he runs down and the wee boy's kind of collapse.
Yeah.
Thankfully, the husband's a doctor, which was about the only fucking thing that calmed me down at this point, I've got to say. So now, by this point, they have got... The car's broken down, they can't move the car, but they've now got this little baby. They do go to the tent and get clean clothes for it, clean them up and change them and all that kind of thing, you know? And then the wee baby's just sleeping in the back of the car. I swear to God, I'm nearly crying. the husband then is kind of at the point that he's just going to set off on foot to go and get help. Some of the timing might be slightly wrong here, as I say, I only watched the film the once.
Yeah.
But basically, the German knew that they were going to this place because he did the conversation with the husband earlier on. He mentioned something to Chuck about it. Because obviously you didn't know what they'd done at the time. He's like, that, you know what we did, and they're worried that this couple will find traces of what they've done. Mm-hmm. While German's sleeping, Chuck goes out himself and goes to kind of suss them out and see what's going on kind of thing, and presumably sort of deal with the situation himself. So he gets there, they have no idea who he is. They're like, oh well, thank God you're here, we need help kind of thing. We found this wee boy and his parents are missing kind of thing. He then says that he is some kind of pig hunter because there's like wild pigs that live in these woods, mm-hmm. and that he'd met the family a few days ago when he was down surveying the pigs or something like that, and that they'd said they were going to walk over to the falls, which is like a 20 minute walk away. Anyway, he basically convinces the husband to go with them,
yeah,
to see if they can find them. He's like, he's saying, you can't just take the kid, what if they're just away, you know, and some of them, they come back, you know. So he's like, we'll go check it out, there's no sign of them, we'll jump in my van and we'll take the kid to the police station kind of thing. So that's fine. So the girl stays at the car with the baby and the two of them head off into the woods type thing. Mm-hmm. I think it's at this point that we get the flashback to what had happened previously. We see the family do go a walk up to these falls. The girl, being a typical friggin' teenager, doesn't want to go, so she stays behind. The mum, dad and the baby head off. When she's on her own at the camp, she thinks she hears something in the woods. She gets a little bit freaked out and goes and locks herself in the car and goes to sleep. These two turn up. I think they're kind of drinking, they're driving about with guns with them and all that because they're hunters. And they find her in the car, and German basically could egg the other one on to rape the girl. Mm-hmm. They've clearly done things like this in the past, but I think German's in the he was jailed for it, and he's not long out kind of thing. And it's all this kind of, you know, you've got to take these chances when they come along type thing. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the kind of fucking chat that's going on. Shoot gets on board with it. They are trying to get the girl out the car. At this point, it's just Chook who's trying to get out the car. I think the other one's out scouting about to see where the parents are and all that. But the girl gets frightened. She's locked herself in the car and she starts peeping the car horn, which the parents hear. Chook's trying to get her to stop and all that. German comes running back up. He smashes the window to get her out of the car with a gun. In fact, he doesn't smash the window, he just points a gun's like, get out of the fucking car. So they get her out. The dad has run on ahead of the mum and the baby to see what's going on. He kind of sees them dragging her off. He jumps at them and all that, but they kick crap out of him. The mum puts the baby in like a little cot thing in the tent and then goes to try and help. Basically, they all get the shit kicked out of them, tied up kind of thing, mm-hmm. apart from the baby, which is in the tent, and the other two don't know it's there. They then get marched up into the woods. You know things are going to go bad for them.
Mm-hmm.
It cuts back to sort of present, if you like. The husband's up there with Chook, they're walking through the woods, bit of chat, blah, blah, blah. They come to a clearing, the husband's at the front and he clearly sees something. It then cuts back in time, so you get shown what it was that he sees. And this bit was really jarring as well, because you kind of assume that they've got them tied up, they'll start tormenting them a bit,
mm-hmm.
and then maybe torturing them a wee bit, and then they'll drink a bit and it'll all get out of hand, and then something terrible will happen. It's not like that at all. Basically, it cuts to a scene. The dad is tied up at a tree, tied to a tree, with his head taped to it so he can't move his head. Mm-hmm. And he's obviously the shit kicked out of them. Two girls are just lying on the ground, bound, naked from the waist down. And they've clearly both been raped. The husband's been forced to watch this. And these two are just kicking about, having a drink and fucking about with their guns. They then do this kind of William Tell idea with a can on top of the husband's head. They end up fucking shooting the husband.
Yeah.
They then do it with the wife, but she's conscious when it's happening, so she keeps running. She gets shot, but she gets shot like in the shoulder type thing. They assume she's dead, and they just walk over to the girl who's lying there, and they just put up a rifle at her head and shoot her as well.
Yeah.
It's the fact that the scene literally opens with this scene of kind of rape and devastation. I wasn't expecting that at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I say, you expect it that they're all tied up and then you'll see a process kind of unfold before you.
An escalation. You know?
Yeah, exactly. And it's just not the case. You see the aftermath and it's quite graphic. Do you know what I mean? You can see that they're naked to the waist down. You can figure out what's happened. There's the bit that the father's clearly been made to watch this, so that's literally tearing my heart out through my ribs and shitting itself out through my arse. And then there's the kind of callousness about the way that they're actually killed. You know, the first two, it's the we're playing a game type thing. And then the third one is basically, can you leave her alive? Just fucking shoot her in the head.
Mm-hmm.
And then they wander off. They wander off. It then cuts back to the husband and Chook finding these bodies. But there's only two there. The mother's body's not there. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of immediately realise, oh yeah, she gets shot in the shoulder. So there's nothing to say that she died.
Yeah.
So they set off looking for her. Chook's a bit panicked when he realises that, you know, one of them's missing kind of thing. They find her.
Mm-hmm.
The doctor runs over, checks her. She is still alive. She starts to give her, she starts saying Ollie, which is the wee boy's name, and he's saying, yeah, it's okay, don't worry, you know, we found him, he's okay, he's with my wife, Ollie's okay, kind of thing, you know. and you just see Chook bringing the rifle up behind his head and shooting her, and you just see him get hit in the face with the blood type thing, you know, mm-hmm. at which point he realises, oh my Christ, this is clearly who did this kind of thing, you know. Yeah, it was, that scene was fucking brutal.
Yeah.
I thought, but again, very cleverly done. Very cleverly done, because it's just this, that initial image just really burned into my brain, and I couldn't get it out, kind of thing, you know what I mean? The kind of immediacy of it.
Yeah.
Like, just getting punched in the fucking face, kind of thing, you know? So obviously things start to go wrong from here. German has turned up down at the cars. He realised Chook was missing, he's going after him. So he's now found the wife and the wee baby. She's trying to get away from him. She cuts his arm with a knife that they had in the car. God. I'm trying to think the exact... She escapes with the baby, that's what it is, mm-hmm. and starts running through the woods. So German's chasing after her. But the husband, doctor guy, manages to get away from Chook, so he's running through the woods, Chook's chasing after him type thing. Chook's sort of stalking him through the woods, and you see a flash of somebody running, he turns around and shoots, but it's German that he's shot. So he's kind of bleeding out and he's apologising to him and all this, and German's just asking him to finish him off, kind of thing, you know, don't let me suffer type thing. Which I was surprised about, I've got to say. Because there was a little bit of me thinking, is there going to be a killing ground too?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Is it going to be like Wolf Creek, where none of them make it, or one makes it out alive, kind of thing, but it was so remote they can't tell you where they were, kind of idea. But, you know, so we're about maybe two-thirds of the way through the film and German's died. And as I say, this is when Chook's character starts to change a bit, I felt. Because
mm-hmm.
He is there and he becomes very kind of cold and clinical and I'm just going to fucking kill you all type thing, you know. In fact, actually, I think, no, just before he shoots German, he actually says to the guy, yeah, I'm going to fucking kill you, but you're going to watch me rape your wife first.
Yeah.
Which was a fucking horrible... His delivery, and it was phenomenal, it's got to be said, in a very unpleasant way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there's these sort of hunting scenes through the woods type thing. He manages to capture the girl with the baby. And I think German's still alive at this point, and he's trying to sort him out, or he's trying to get the doctor to sort him out. No, I don't think the doctor's there at this point. Basically, the wee baby starts to cry, and he's like, shut the baby up. And she's hysterical. She's trying to get the baby to be quiet and all that. And he just won't. He's like, give me the baby. And obviously, she won't, kind of thing. And they end up basically struggling and wrestling with the baby.
Mm-hmm.
And... I can't remember really how they do it exactly, the chain of events that lead up to this particular bit, and I was fucked if I was rewinding and watching it again, to be quite truthful. But basically he gets the baby off her, and I think he either fucks the baby off a tree or just throws it down.
Yeah.
Like, but a full on, there's just this awful noise.
Yeah.
And the wee baby's just lying on the ground, kind of thing. And I swear to God, I did that whole and just my hands flew up to like cover my mouth, you know, that way, like,
yep.
Women,
that's
people, or the way my wife babes when she gets up right.
Yeah.
And I just, my eyes were like two saucers. I mean, Colette Dunham just stared at me as if, you know, what's wrong, Craig? I think I'd said to her early on when I realised that the family unit was quite similar to ours, I was like, I'm not going to enjoy this.
Yeah.
And I think she remembered you saying that there's some particularly unpleasant bits in it.
This was the bit I was talking about. This was the bit that I said.
I knew right away that's what it was.
Yeah, because it did the same to me when it happened on the street.
Yeah.
I was fucking floored when I saw this. And I knew for a fact, if that got the reaction from me, it was going to destroy you.
It was fucking terrible. I mean, it was that way. I can't believe they've done that.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of, it's like one of those few taboos that's left.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like that scene in Train Spotting is really the only other one I can think of. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? With like a baby. Like some terrible happened to an actual baby. But this was really horrible, the way they're wrestling. She's screaming. You can only imagine trying to hold on to that wee baby.
Yeah.
Without hurting it, obviously.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Knowing that, oh, fucking awful. Awful. I am struggling to remember how Chook dies. How does Chook die, Duncan? Tell me.
Well, can I just say one more thing about...
Yes, of course, yeah, you can. Like,
about the baby scene in particular, is that when I'm watching something in a movie which is already...
Oh, I've remembered how he dies. It's okay.
All right. Carry on. I was going to say, like, when I'm watching something particularly bleak in a movie, like, there is a level that I think things will go to.
Uh-huh.
This movie and that scene found a whole new level.
Yeah.
And it makes me, like, to me, this has, like significantly more impact than the scene in the Serbian film, which, like, at the time we were like, that is just fucking obviously, clearly badly executed, terribly fake scene and all the rest. And then you see something like this, which is clearly also fake, but the way it's set up, the way it's executed, the way it's delivered is such a way that it genuinely left me, like, shaking after seeing it. And I, once again, I don't know if that's because, you know, we're both dads and, that, you know, these sort of things, but I think, like you, there is a certain line that you don't tend to go past in horror movies. And this one fucking, like, drives a four-wheel drive right over that line and well beyond it. But done in such a way where it's not like the centerpiece of the movie, it's just something that happens in the movie as a string of very horrible things that happens in the movie. And I think that's what kind of almost makes it work, if that makes sense, without being like, well, you know, you've went too far or whatever. It kind of sits uneasily well in a movie which is already bleak all the way throughout, so... So yeah, I've talked a bit there, and you said you'd remembered, so if you want to continue on, you can.
Yeah, basically, you know, we're approaching the end of the film, there's more kind of chasing through the woods type thing. The girl ends up back at the car. I think her and Chook kind of struggle at the car, and then I can't remember how he gets knocked out or injured or something, and anyway, she ends up caving his head in.
Yes.
With a big fucking rock at the end of it, kind of thing. That's how Chook goes. I think the husband gets shot or something like that. They both kind of end up in a hospital at the end. Up to that point, actually, she asks, or he's saying, "Where's your husband?" And she says, at one point, he's gone, he saved Ollie, because she... So this is what happens when I don't take notes. I jump a bit over the place. There's a scene earlier on where she sees the baby's blanket and the baby's not there.
Yeah.
And she thinks that her husband found him,
yes,
and took him away, mm-hmm, type thing. But then we see later on the dog going over and, like, finding the baby lying, crying, and it sits down next to it.
Yeah.
Now, the film ends with the two of them kind of coming round in a hospital, basically. So the two of them survive. Chook and German are both dead. You don't hear any more about the baby.
Yeah.
And this was one of the things that fucking haunted me, because I couldn't figure out, did the dog, was it like, you hear stories happening, you know, the dog finds the wee baby, and it sits guard over the wee baby until, you know, help arrives.
Yep.
So that's another bit of mystery as well. The police arrive at one point.
Yes.
And they find her in a crashed car type thing. She thinks she's been saved. They're going, "It's okay, miss, you know, they're walking towards the car. We're here now to help." And Chook shoots the two cops.
Yeah, kills them, yeah.
So, obviously we know that there will be police intervention later on, because there's two dead fucking policemen now. So the police would have been in the area. But I just remember thinking at the end, did that dog sit guard over the wee baby, you know, until help came?
Mm-hmm.
And like fucking Lassie, did it bark to draw the policeman over to save the wee baby? or did it eat the baby?
Oh, pass.
Do you know what I mean? Because there's a bit when it goes over and sits down next to it, the dog's slavering.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I am being really fucking morbid, but it's like, in my mind, they specifically left the baby as an open-ended plot bit.
Yep.
To give you this, is the wee baby saved and so everything was okay, the man and the woman survived and they saved the baby, or did they survive and something just abominable happened to that wee baby? Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And you don't know the answer because there's nothing there to give you one way or the other.
Yeah, they don't clear up that at all, they just leave it open.
Yeah. And that's the killing ground, I mean. It's not the really jarring bits, relatively few and far between, but it's the impact they have is just unbelievable. But it's like you see, from the start, you know things aren't going to go well, particularly for the family. You don't really know about the couple.
Yeah.
I assumed actually something worse would have happened to them, you know, like one or both of them would have died type thing. Because a film that it's quite reminiscent of is Eden Lake.
Yes, this is when we were having the conversation in your house. You said it looks like it might be a cross between Wolf Creek and Eden Lake, and I said to you, that's eerily spot on as a comparison. Eerily.
Yeah. But obviously at the end of Eden Lake, spoiler for Ender, it's not seen Eden Lake. You know, nobody kind of survives the end of Eden Lake. But two of them doing this one. But you know it's not going to go well. The characters of Chuck and German are just repugnant. It's like I said earlier, Killing Ground is an excellent film.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. It's, the acting is brilliant. Everybody in it's good. The concept, it's not entirely original, but it's, you know, there's not a lot of films like this. It's flawlessly executed. The scenery is just stunning. I could have watched that all day, to be quite honest. In fact, if that film had just been about some folk camp, I'd have watched that. It just looked amazing. You know, the scenery was phenomenal. It was beautifully shot. And just the kind of... It's just one of those films that gets into your soul and just scratches it. Do you know what I mean? It's really fucking powerful. Really powerful in a very unpleasant way, I've got to say. I like to think I've not ruined everything, because there's other scenes. There's scenes in a bar earlier on in that, and
yeah,
just builds the whole picture of the two of them. It flies by, this film, I've got to say. I'm terrible for watching clocks when I'm watching films. I think it's because I'm so tired all the time, or how much is left now. Even if I'm enjoying a film, I don't recall doing that with this film at all.
No.
It just flies by. I think there's just this constant dread. God, what's going to happen? But it's going to happen sometime soon, you know?
That's the thing that kind of stuck with me from my watching, is there's just this foreboding, almost helplessness that is just in the movie. There's just like an aura around the movie from about the start right through to the very end, and it just is, it's almost like an uncomfortable weight on you when you're watching it, and it just it never lifts at all. There's just a genuine kind of feeling of hopelessness throughout this movie, and I think it had a definite impact on me from my 31 of October. Whilst there was tons of movies I really enjoyed, there weren't many that had impacts on me to the point where, like, 1-2 days later, I was still thinking back over certain scenes. And I don't even necessarily think, you know, it's like a spectacular movie or anything. It's just I don't generally feel that way much anymore through watching movies. The last one or two movies that I can think of that, it did make me feel like I felt when I watched Eden Lake, which I've said many times, Eden Lake is a movie I've seen twice, and I don't sorry, three times it'll be, because I watched it with you as well. So three times I've watched that movie, and if I never see it again, I'd be quite happy. And that's not because I dislike the movie. I think the movie's really freaking pretty incredible. It's just, it made me feel horrible. It takes a couple of days for that to shift. The Killing Ground is that very movie that has the same impact. And once again, very much like Hymns of Love, which we talked about a couple of months ago, this is a feature-length directorial debut. This Damien Powers guy, this is his first movie. He's done some shorts, but this is his first movie. And I don't know what's in the water over in Australia, but the talent pool over there, not even just actors, but, a singular vision. This guy both wrote and directed this story, and it's pretty fucking phenomenal. So, yeah, I think it's an incredible movie, but much like yourself, I didn't watch it again for the run-up to this show because I was just like, I've seen it. I don't think
really since Eden Lake and Lake Mungo, which were two films that we did in the same Basby Halloween, that this is the first one since then that's made me feel like this, just that really, I feel awful after watching that film. Do you know what I mean? And I have to say, you mentioned earlier on, if you had put this in Basby Halloween this year, that it would have fucked me up.
Yeah,
it did fuck me up anyway. But that would have been one in the bank for you.
Could you imagine watching this and Megan Is Missing in the same week?
No.
Yeah, I mean,
God no.
Yeah, I don't God, think you no. you wouldn't have been back for the following week.
No. It's a good job you never watched it till after we'd done that.
Yeah, it was.
After we put the list together.
Yeah,
because I take it if you had seen this film before, you would have put it on the list. Yeah?
It would have replaced Capture Kill Release.
Right.
So had I seen this movie, this one would have been a definite pick for me, because the way you described exactly how you felt there is exactly how I thought you would be when you watched the movie, and that's why I gave you that kind of that little heads up. When I was at your house, is like when I was watching it, even down to the fact where I was thinking back to, I was like, Baz inserts himself in the movie, and the family is basically Baz's family. So.
Yeah, that was the bit that fucking blew my mind, to be honest. You know what I mean? When it took a wee second or two, and I'm like, hold on a minute. All right, that wee girl's not her daughter. Yeah. That's like his daughter. I'm like, oh my fucking God.
Yeah.
And then the wee baby turns and I'm like, oh Christ. This is literally my family. It's like looking at my family. Do you know what I mean? Oh. God.
Yeah, that's why I said it. But I'm glad you watched it. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
So am I. I don't regret watching it for a second. And even when you did give me the warnings, well, they're horror movies. You know, you watch them to get a reaction or to make you feel a certain way. It's kind of sadomasochistic to an extent. And the film delivered in spades.
Yes.
I don't mind feeling like this if it's a good film.
Yeah.
You know, when it's a little piece of dog shit like Bad Ben, that annoys me.
It annoys me too, but when it's a
well-executed, well-written, well-acted film, I have no problem feeling like crap like this. Yeah. You know, the film did its job. I mean, but please, folks, go and check this out. It's a phenomenal bit of cinema, I think.
Yeah.
But just be prepared to feel a bit shit about stuff for a while, you know what I mean?
Yes, it's not a feel-good experience at all. The last thing I need to ask you is, because this is a bonus episode, we don't get to ask you this very often, but we do Netflix grades, you know the rules. One is hated it, two didn't like it, three liked it, four really liked it, five loved it, you can do 0.5s. Where does Killing Ground come in for you?
Five,
nice.
Yeah, I really did. I loved it in that way, you know, it's like I'm saying, I felt awful at the end of this film, but I just, to me, this is like this is a top marks movie as far as I'm concerned.
Very nice, very, very nice. Right, I am desperately trying to remember what I gave it before, because I've already given it a grade. I want to say I gave it a 4 out of 5, he says, completely unsure. I'm sure it was a 4. If it wasn't a 4, it maybe was a 4.5. But it was definitely around that area. I thought it was a really fucking good movie. And like Baz says, very much worth your time. Right, we are going to take our last break of this bonus episode. We are going to be back to close it up right after this.
You're listening to the podcast Under the Stairs.
And you've been listening to the podcast Under the Stairs. This has been a very special bonus episode featuring a review of Killing Grind from 2016, officially released in the UK 2017, but like the Baz said, still not in a physical format. I don't know if you can digitally buy it, but still not physical in the UK. It is physical in America though, I believe. It's fair to say that whilst the experience wasn't the most enjoyable experience you've had, and maybe, you know, has left you feeling maybe a little bit worse for wear, you did enjoy watching the movie for the purposes of the show though, Baz.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I say, I can appreciate that this is a good film. It's just not one that makes you feel very good.
Yeah.
But it can't be denied in my mind that it's a good film.
Yep. And this is technically the second last movie review of 2017 by the Baz.
Yep. Only one more to go.
Not that you're counting down.
No, indeed, indeed. Yeah, as we mentioned earlier on, it looks very much like it's going to be Fright Night.
Yeah.
Who knows? Actually, it was Fright Night's not the one I really wanted to. I don't think I really had one I wanted to win.
Yeah.
Fright Night was kind of one of the ones I was less interested in. It's one of these films I feel I have to see rather than I wanted to see, kind of thing. You know, but that's what we did this last year as well. You get a wee list of kind of catch all, let's get Baz to watch some of these films. But I think Psycho made a return. I think Psycho was on last year's list.
Yeah, Psycho's on last year's list, and Wicker Man went out.
Yeah, last year we did the Wicker Man, yeah, which turned out to be a great episode and a great movie.
Yep, you're gonna have a fucking ball with Fright Night.
Yeah,
it's just gonna tickle your 80s fancy just a little bit. It's just so wonderfully fucking 1980s, I already know that there's been so many people quoting the movie to you by saying that you're so cool, Baz, and the irony of the situation is that you have not seen the movie, so you don't get the fucking quote.
I totally well didn't Facebook get that group. I wasn't sure if they were just being nice or if they were being sarcastic. I now see it was a film quote.
Yes, it's one of the more infamous lines in the movie. But yeah, you're going to have a ball with that movie. It's a ton of fun if that's what lands. I originally had my vote cast for Get Out, because that's the one I really wanted you to watch. And then
I think secretly deep down, maybe that was the one I wanted.
Yeah, Andrew Valdez, our good buddy, pointed out that like every podcast and their mother this year have reviewed Get Out. In fact, the show itself, I reviewed Get Out earlier on in the year. And it wouldn't be refreshing to see the Baz review something different that wasn't, you know, being reviewed by everyone else. Ironically, we are in a podcast where less than 6 months ago I just reviewed Fright Night, so we're rolling into that. But once again,
why did you review Fright Night?
So I did it as part of my In Reverence series. So that's the movies that influenced me growing up, and Fright Night is definitely one of them. It's one of the kind of pivotal ones from the 80s, where, you know, when I watched this, I was just like, this genre is my love and I declare my life to thee, which is pretty much Fright Night will do that to you. It's just a fucking great movie. It's one of the few movies as well where there is a remake out there, and I actually think the remake's just as fun. As you know, I think it's just as fun, and you get a chance, watch the remake, I think you'll enjoy it. It's got David Tennant in it, I think, and Colin Farrell as well.
I was going to say, because I think I was looking on Amazon today for buying it, and I think I was like, right, that's a weird looking cover, and then Colin Farrell, I was like, no, it must be a remake.
It might be, I believe, without like starting conversations elsewhere, it might be, I think it might be Netflix, I might be wrong about that. We'll double check.
All right, oh, good to know.
Double check is Netflix or Shudder. I think one of them had Fright Night, so it might be in the remake as well now that I'm thinking about it. But yeah, it'll be fun if we're doing that one. If it's something else, it'll be equally fun. It's just fun recording with you, Baz. So Baz.
Yeah.
We have travelled long and wide through many movies, done franchises, done full directors, back catalogues. We have discussed some truly phenomenal horror movies, and let's be honest, some fantastic jellies, which are new favourite subgenre of horror, but I know that out with another Jello show, which you can't wait to do, the thing you're most looking forward to is a couple of weeks off.
Indeed. Do you know, interestingly, I nearly put Suspiria on that list for the vote.
Oh, I would have won had you put that there. People would have picked that one right to the fucking top.
I know, and then I just thought, it's like, I'd be fucked watching that.
So, I can't believe you said that. You're just bumming me out now, man. We're going to take a couple of weeks off after that next review.
We are indeed.
And we will sit down over probably a pint or two in a pub somewhere and plan out 2018 and where we go. Will we be doing more movies the like of Killing Ground? Maybe. Maybe we'll be doing more movies the like of Tenebrae. Who knows, Baz? Who knows? The world is our oyster.
We should actually, Baz v Halloween next year should just be all films like The Killing Ground.
Oh, could you imagine? In an ideal world, that's what it would be, but then I don't think after 5 weeks you'd be speaking to anyone. Like, we've not seen Baz. He's locked himself and his family into his house saying, this is the only place we're safe.
Yeah, he's bunkered down. He's gone full prepper.
But it is worth saying, there is a multitude of ways to check out the podcast Under the Stairs. As always, we recommend you check us out through Apple Podcasts. It's the best way to check out the show. Subscribe to our feed, that way you get the episodes as and when they drop. Access to the entire back catalogue as well. Not only that, you can leave us a little rating and a review. The ratings, 5 stars for example, the more of them we get, the higher up the iTunes charts we push for people to check out our show. But reviews tell people why they should. It takes a couple of seconds for you to do. It's free, means the world to us, and helps us promote our show. We love you all for promoting the show, so please do that if you haven't already. You can check us out at Stitcher Smart Radio, SoundCloud, Google Play, and on the TuneIn app. Visit our Facebook group page, facebook.com/groups/teapotscast. Our website is teapotscast.com. The Baz is in charge of our twin prongs of social media sexiness, Twitter and Instagram. Baz, how can they interact with you over there?
You can find us on Twitter. The handle is @teapotscast. And just occasionally you'll get little gems like fucking broken, which is what I tweeted the other day. After I finished watching Killing Ground. you'll also find us on Instagram, which is actually my favourite social media platform at the moment. I'm quite enjoying Instagram, quite like it. We are at @teapotscast on that one as well. So give us a follow on both of them. And if you do, please say hello or send us a wee picture or tag us in a photo or something. But just let yourself be known to the Baz.
Yep, there was a good couple of days there where it was taken over by pictures of people wearing Baz flag t-shirts.
Yeah, that was awesome, man. That was a good time.
Did you ever think you'd see the day?
Apart from Liam's. Liam's was a bit weird.
Like I said in the previous recording, Liam's had too much clothing for my liking. So yeah, if everyone wants to get it out, snap a wee photo, send it to Baz and not me. So that was a great campaign. Well, thanks everyone once again who contributed to that. Once again, I just want to extend a huge thanks to everyone that checked out our show and promoted our show in November. The numbers were nuts, like absolutely nuts, to the point where I almost kind of demand a recount, but I have validated it, and yeah, it was incredible. And that's all you guys out there doing those fantastic things. The Baz will return in a couple of weeks' time to do your listener pick for Listener December. But until then, Baz, would you like to say goodbye to the listeners, please?
Yep, I'd just like to echo everything Duncan said. Thanks very much for listening to the show. Thanks for getting involved with our merch campaign. I have a lovely, shiny, phallic new mic to show for your efforts. So thanks, everybody. As Duncan says, I will speak to you in a couple of weeks on my last show of this year, and then I'll be back in the new year with a screaming horror boner.
Oh dear, that image. That was like ingrained right in the brain. Yes, he will be. I will be with him, trying to shield his horror boner from your innocent eyes. But until then, until I speak to you next, please take care of yourselves wherever you are. and whatever the time zone is and whatever you're up to in this big bad world of ours. This is Duncan McLeish broadcasting live from under the stairs, and I'm signing off.
Know what time it is.